You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
When Karl Rove left the Bush White House, he had been implicated in two of the administration's biggest scandals, the firing of U.S. attorneys and the outing of Valerie Plame Wilson as a CIA agent. Now, years later, he is once again a powerful force in the Republican Party. Vanity Fair contributing editor Craig Unger has called his latest book, Boss Rove, Inside Karl Rove's Secret Kingdom of Power. It's published by Scribner, and I'm very pleased to welcome him back to our show. Hello.
Thanks for having me back.
Well, your title, Boss Rove, evokes political machines from a different era. Tammany Hall, Boss Tweed, Haig, Curley, Long, Pendergrass, most of them Democrats.
Right. But Rove is a party boss of a different kind, and it involves lots and lots of money, really over $1 billion now. And he's worked – it's an extraordinary thing because he's created a kind of infrastructure that works outside the party structure where he has enormous amounts of power but very little responsibility.
But he used to work within the power structure. He was once referred to as Bush's brain. So he's reinvented himself. After he left the White House, didn't he just become a pundit on Fox?
Well, it may have seemed that way, and I think a lot of people thought that he was merely a creature of the Bushes. And if anything, I think he's proven them wrong, that he had this dream of a permanent Republican majority. And he started piecing it together. I mean, he was swept away in disgrace after the Bush administration. The Democrats won both houses and the White House. And it seemed like he was finished, but he immediately, within a year of Obama taking the White House, he started rebuilding things. And he put after the three things happened. There was a Citizens United decision by the Supreme Court, which allowed the growth of these enormous super PACs. And Rove is the king of the super PAC. There was also the Republican Party was just devastated. And Michael Steele was the chairman, and he was doing terribly. He couldn't raise any money. And if you recall, in early 2010, there was a scandal where there was a lesbian bondage-themed strip club in Los Angeles where donors had been entertained. And this did not play well in the party of family values. And then finally, Rove himself had a luncheon at his house in Weaver Terrace in Washington, D.C., and he had about two dozen power brokers from the Republican Party there. And this was the birth of this new super PAC.
And he wound up playing a large part in financing the Republican takeover of Congress in 2010, raising a lot more money than Michael Steele and the RNC did.
Absolutely. He put together about $300 million. The Republicans won 63 seats, which was a huge, huge margin, and really retook the Congress from the Democrats.
Do we have any idea how much money his super PAC, American Crossroads, and its related group, Crossroads GPS, currently have at their disposal for this election?
Well, if you put everything together, and there's so many super PACs, it's really an alphabet soup. But there's really over $1 billion by some reports. And there's
where's all this money coming from? We have a troubled economy.
Right. Well, not for the Koch brothers. Not for Sheldon Adelson. The Koch brothers are said to be putting in as much as $400 million. Sheldon Adelson, the Las Vegas casino magnate, he's putting in as much as $100 million. And you have several others. And Rove has sort of put it all together. And you're going to see enormous amounts spent in the swing states, the battleground states, in the next 2 months.
Just to defeat Barack Obama, how much of it will be also spent on trying to defeat down-ticket Democrats?
Well, they will definitely go after key Senate races. One, of course, is Elizabeth Warren, to fight Elizabeth Warren in Massachusetts. Another is they want to defeat Sherrod Brown in Ohio.
Well, up until now, people did not have to reveal that they gave money to any of these super PACs. But don't the rules change when you get close to an election?
Well, there are different kinds of political action committees. And the American Crossroads, for example, you do disclose, the donors do disclose who they are. But there's so-called dark money. And there's in that regard, Rove has something called Crossroads GPS. And he calls it a social welfare organization. The way they use the language is just extraordinary to me. If you look at the United States Supreme Court decision written by Justice Anthony Kennedy, it says, and I'm quoting, that the money is supposed to help give voice to a deprived and disadvantaged class. And excuse me, Adelson and the Koch brothers are multi-billionaires.
So it's social welfare. Does that mean that they're limited as to the kinds of messages that they can promote?
Well, but the limits, though, you know, Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert have had a lot of fun with this, that there's not supposed to be any coordination. The truth of the matter is the messages tend to end up highly partisan. Rove has defended this in a way that he actually goes back to the civil rights movement, and he equates himself with there were rulings that allowed donors to the NAACP and the civil rights movement to have donate in secret. And it's as if he's comparing himself to Martin Luther King, which is kind of silly. These are billionaires fighting for lower taxes, really, is what it is, not for equal rights.
Although I have a feeling they also have other things that they're concerned about. The Koch brothers, who grow out of libertarian principles, Sheldon Adelson, who sees this very much about Middle East politics, there are other concerns here. It's been reported that the Obama campaign outraised Romney in August, although not by much. That doesn't include what we're talking about here.
Exactly,
it?
Exactly. The Obama campaign, I mean, they came off a very successful convention, especially for the Democrats. I'm old enough to remember 1968 when it was an absolute fiasco. But this was astoundingly united for the Democrats, and it went off pretty much without a hitch. So they appear to have gotten a good bounce of that, both in terms of the polls and in terms of fundraising. But as you say, that does not include political action committees, where someone like the Koch brothers can just write a check for $400 million.
That's because they own the second largest privately owned corporation in America.
Absolutely.
Craig Unger is the New York Times bestselling author of House of Bush, House of Saud. His latest book is Boss Rove, Inside Karl Rove's Secret Kingdom of Power. And you write that Rove's, I'm quoting, Rove's hallmark is his absence, no fingerprints. That's how he's always worked. How much control does he exert over his super PACs? I mean, do we see fingerprints there?
Well, you do, and it's quite striking, actually, especially in the case of someone like Todd Aiken, the Missouri senatorial candidate. And in that race, Aiken himself had raised $2.2 million, but he had gotten an additional $15 million from Rove's super PACs and his 501c4s. And suddenly, of course, Aiken made this comment about legitimate rape, and you can see through it a real schism in the Republican Party between the party establishment embodied by Rove and the Tea Partiers embodied by Aiken. And Rove immediately, instantly pulled the plug out from under him, really kneecapped him and cut off all funding. And again, it sort of gives the lie to the notion that this money is not related to a campaign. So you see that happen again and again.
So it's all about really winning the election. They felt that Aiken was going to hurt them nationally. Rove even makes these sometimes indiscreet jokes about murdering people.
Well, exactly. You see Rove behaving as a real party boss. He did everything he could to kill Aiken's candidacy, and astoundingly, Aiken said, "No, I'm going to keep running." And then Rove started making jokes and said, "Well, if he ends up dead, don't come looking for me." I mean, he's actually said that. And now in response, Mike Huckabee and Newt Gingrich have been attacking Rove for that comment.
Well, and Mike Huckabee even has organized support of Todd Aiken, as he did organize support for Chick-fil-A.
Yes.
Absolutely. So is he also becoming something of a powerful force in the Republican Party, or is he just the voice of dissidents?
Well, I think he's more the voice of the more Tea Partiers and the Christian right.
And the Tea Partiers Do they at all like Karl Rove? After all, he is still pretty much funding many of their candidates.
No, they are not fond of him at all. And in many ways, they when they look at the there's a real contradiction here, because they see him and the Bush era as an era of free spending republicanism that violated the basic conservative principles. At the same time, Rove has his controls the purse strings on about $1 billion.
What about the Koch brothers? Does he get along with them? Does he get along with Sheldon Adelson?
He accommodates, and that's what Rove is really brilliant at. If you go back to the Bush era, he didn't want Dick Cheney to be vice president, but as soon as it happened, he was perfectly happy and went along with it. With the Koch brothers, he's allowing Paul Ryan to be the vice presidential candidate is essentially a concession to the Koch brothers.
Wasn't Rove the architect of the concept of compassionate conservatism?
Well, it was a good rhetorical device, but I think Rove is not an ideologue. I can't say that he believes in anything. And if you look at the Bush era, he is not in his heart a real Christian evangelical, but he used Christian evangelicals as a key part of Bush's constituency.
So what is he? In the end, you're suggesting he's just somebody who really loves being in a position of power and being a power broker?
Well, yes. And I talked to Roger Stone, who's a major Republican operative, and he said, look, Rove isn't an ideologue. It's about crony capitalism. In other words, it's about you do a favor, you contribute to my candidates, and we'll make sure you're happy down the road.
The political strategist Doug Schoen wrote in Forbes, the 2012 campaign now is not Obama versus Romney, it's Obama versus Karl Rove. So does Rove have a warm relationship with Romney?
Not particularly. It's very, very different than it was with George W. Bush. He and Bush were close friends. They were sort of alter egos, or he was Bush's brain. With Romney, it's more distant, and he operates by remote control. But if you look at Romney's high command, you will see key people who are close to Rove. There's Ed Gillespie, for one, who was co-founder of American Crossroads with Rove. There's Beth Myers, who was, again, a colleague of Rove's, and she helped select the vice presidential candidate.
Well, where did Rove stand during the Republican primaries? Wasn't he generally in support of Romney?
Absolutely. And I mean, it's very interesting with Fox News, which is, when way back Roger Ailes, who's chairman of Fox News, was in the Bush administration and a proposal for something called GOP TV. Well, essentially, he got what he wanted with GOP TV. And at one point in this campaign, Fox had five presidential candidates on their payroll, five Republican presidential candidates, not to mention Karl Rove. And Rove was taking pot shots at those he didn't like all along. And you could see him effectively shoot them in the back. There was Rick Perry early on. There was Sarah Palin, Herman Cain. Donald Trump was briefly in the mix. Newt Gingrich, Rick Santorum. Again and again, he went after everyone except Romney.
Did he see them all as kind of loose cannons that had to be kept under control? Romney is the least loose cannon is least likely to be accused of being a loose cannon of those people.
Absolutely. And when you look at some of the Tea Partiers, that's where Rove would draw the line. For example, if you remember, Christine O'Donnell was a Delaware senatorial candidate in 2010, and she mentioned that she had dabbled in witchcraft. Well, as soon as she said that, Rove went after her. Similarly with Todd Akin.
My guest is Craig Unger. His latest book is Boss Rove, Inside Karl Rove's Secret Kingdom of Power. It's published by Scribner. We'll continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We are back with Craig Unser, who is a contributing editor at Vanity Fair. He's also appeared frequently as an analyst on CNN, the ABC radio network, many other broadcast outlets. He has been a guest on this show a few times, and we spoke during the Republican convention, and we talked a bit about your encounter with Karl Rove. Now, he knew the book was coming out. Do you think he's read it?
Well, he seemed to have read it. This was at a breakfast sponsored by Politico, and there was a question and answer period afterwards, and I identified myself, and he immediately sort of launched into me, and he said, oh, here's Unger. He's going to flack his book. Watch, launch away, Unger, launch away. And he was very odd about it. He described it as an entertaining work of fiction. He said wrongly that I accused him of being a murderer, which I in no way, shape, or form do. And it was quite something. I thought he would ignore it, but he didn't.
It was reported last week that Rahm Emanuel will now lead efforts to raise more super PAC money for the Obama campaign at a time when he's under attack in his own home city for his battle with the teachers union. Is there any way that the Democrats will be able to catch up with the Republicans in terms of super PAC money before Election Day?
Not entirely. They just don't have these huge fat cats like Sheldon Adelson and the Koch brothers. People like George Soros may help out the Democrats, but they're not playing that game in the same way at all.
To some degree, wasn't Karl Rove responsible for some of the troubles that the Republican Party faced in 2008, the scandals of the Bush years that had made it unattractive to many voters? I mean, it seems like this is almost a miraculous recovery.
Well, absolutely. Even the Republicans described him as toxic. Ed Rollins, a Republican strategist, described him as a brand that was tainted. He showed us the way not to do things. Rove was a major target in the two biggest scandals of the Bush era, the U.S. Attorney scandal and the Valerie Plame scandal. Bush himself had a 22% approval rating when he left, and the Republican Party was in tatters.
Let's go back to his early days in politics. You write that dirty tricks were part of his life even before he got out of college. What was he doing?
Well, it's probably not surprising. In fact, I think it's characteristic of him that he was part of the Nixon campaign during Watergate, and he was actually investigated by the FBI during Watergate at a time when he was, I think, 24 years old. The FBI never really finished the investigation because they had bigger fish to fry. But that college Republican group and his campaign manager was Lee Atwater, who was sort of the legendary pre-Karl Rove figure and the bad boy of the Republican Party.
Although they didn't get along, did they?
They were not particularly close. Lee Atwater was sort of the roguish guy who would meet you at the interview with his blues guitar, and he could play with B.B. King, and he was much, much hipper and cooler than Karl Rove was the nerd. And Atwater, of course, died of a brain tumor when he was just, I believe, 40 years old. And that suddenly opened up space in the party for Karl Rove.
Lee Atwater was also gay, which would probably have caused him some trouble in this current election cycle.
Well, I did not know that, really.
How did Karl Rove establish himself as a force in Texas politics?
Well, it's interesting because you see it as a precursor of what's happening now. The Republican Party in Texas was nowhere 30 years ago, and that's largely because there were powerful conservative Democrats like Lloyd Bentsen and John Conley. So big business said, well, why bother to contribute to the Republican Party? And Karl Rove came up with the answer, and it was through a really boring-sounding issue like tort reform, which is about product liability lawsuits. And he made that into a sizzling hot cash machine for the Republican Party.
Why then didn't he support Rick Perry and his presidential campaign?
Well, he'd brought Rick Perry into politics when he ran a campaign for Perry, who was running for agricultural commissioner of Texas. And they had a big falling out over the Senate race involving Kay Bailey Hutchinson in Texas.
During the Bush administration, it was often reported that Karl Rove was hoping to realign American politics in favor of the Republicans for a generation. Is he still trying to engineer that kind of outcome? Because so many people are saying this is the last opportunity the Republicans have to rely on a white vote swinging the vote.
Right. I think the Republicans have enormous problems in the long run in demographic terms, and there's a certain desperation in what they're doing. Rove had put forth the notion that there's going to be a great permanent Republican majority or major electoral realignment. But in fact, the challenge they face is the Hispanic time bomb. And there are 50 million Hispanics now. There'll be 70 million in 2020.
Was he proposing something similar to Nixon's Southern strategy?
Well, I think what he's really doing is voter suppression. And he started this about 10 years ago. If you look at the U.S. attorney scandal during Bush's second term, United States attorneys like David Iglesias of New Mexico, this is a Republican appointee, said because of Karl Rove's obsession, he was trying to prosecute voter fraud cases. And he investigated, and he couldn't find any. It didn't exist. Voter fraud was itself a fraud. But the Republicans have been pushing this issue, and Rove is one of the fathers of this campaign. And it may result really change the 2012 election.
Well, the courts are still deciding in many cases. Is Karl Rove behind the laws? I mean, was he one of the major proponents of the laws, or is he just the guy who proposed the idea and then the governors of states like Ohio and Wisconsin and the Carolinas pick up on it?
Well, back during the Bush era, he had a lawyer named Mark Hearn who filed, I believe it was 65 lawsuits that helped initiate voter suppression campaigns in more than 30 states. And that a lot of these laws, it takes a while to get them through the state legislature. And now we're seeing whether they'll be adjudicated in each state separately. But Rove was one of the fathers of this campaign.
Part of your book focuses on the Justice Department's prosecution of former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman. What were the allegations against him?
Well, to me, this is one of the great travesties of justice. And you see another way in which Rove has been trying to permanently game the system. One thing, and again, this relates to the U.S. attorney scandal. We've heard about the U.S. attorneys who were fired because they weren't playing ball with the Republicans. Well, what about the other U.S. attorneys who were playing ball with the Republicans? What were they doing? And the answer is they were prosecuting Democrats. And Don Siegelman is probably the most egregious example of this. He was a very popular Southern governor in a very conservative state. And Rove had a colleague in Alabama named Bill Canary. Bill Canary married a woman named Laura Canary. And Bill Canary was supporting the campaigns of the Republican gubernatorial candidate Bob Riley. Meanwhile, his wife indicted Riley's rival, Don Siegelman, and prosecuted him. And sadly, I think he's going to jail tomorrow on the 11th.
And the latest appeal of Don Siegelman's was denied, which would suggest that maybe there is something of a case against him?
Well, I really don't think there is. And the truth is, Siegelman was convicted of bribery, but what he really did is standard operating procedure in American politics. And it's not the prettiest part of our electoral system, but it's a commonplace for campaign donors to often get appointments to various positions. One of his donors got an unpaid position in Alabama. Siegelman made zero money off of it personally. By the same token, George W. Bush appointed over 100 of his donors were given appointments. He was not prosecuted for any of that, but Siegelman's going to have more than 6 years in jail.
My guest is Craig Unger. His latest book, Boss Rove, Inside Karl Rove's Secret Kingdom of Power. It is published by Scribner. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Let's talk about Ohio in 2004. Wasn't the state essential to George Bush's reelection campaign?
Absolutely. In fact, if you look at the Electoral College vote, the entire election, the entire presidency, depended on who won Ohio. And you could see Rove focusing enormous amount of attention there early on. There were dozens of efforts to game the system.
And helped by the Ohio Secretary of State, Ken Blackwell?
Exactly. I mean, Blackwell did something extraordinary. And he was, you know, as Secretary of State, part of his job was to oversee a nonpartisan, fair election. But he also happened to have, I think, a real conflict of interest in that he was co-chairman of the Bush-Cheney campaign in that state.
Now, There have been many reports about voting irregularities and disenfranchisement in Ohio in 2004. Can you run through any of them?
Well, there are so many, it's hard to know where to start. But there were techniques like caging, where they would try to disqualify voters by sending out letters to say, African-American areas that are heavily Democratic. If people did not return them, then they would challenge them when they got to the polling booth and saying, well, you're not really a resident there.
Isn't Ken Blackwell an African-American?
He is, but that didn't seem – he's a Republican too.
You note that in 2004, exit polls showed that John Kerry was ahead in 10 out of 11 of the battleground states, and that if they were correct, Kerry would have won the popular vote by 1.5 million nationally. Why were the polls so wrong?
Well, you know, there's so many debates about exit polls that I'm not sure how to figure out their methodology and whether they may well have been wrong, and I don't rest my entire case on that. One of the things that to me is extraordinary is the anomaly started happening at a certain point at the 11:14 p.m. that night. And that's when a certain computer happened to click into the Ohio electoral system. It's run by a company called SmartTech. And I tracked down its ties to Karl Rove going way back. It's a Byzantine relationship. One of the things that's sort of extraordinary about Rove, I talked to one person who's a real Karl Rove observer and whose career had been really damaged by him. And she said, you know, there's a real dark and terrible beauty to what he does because you often find there are no fingerprints. I talked to a CIA agent who said the CIA could learn a lot from Karl Rove. And this is a company called SmartTech based in Chattanooga, Tennessee. The precursor to the company was funded by Bush's and Rove's major backers. And it's a highly partisan Republican company. But they ended up being the fail oversight for the election in Ohio in 2004.
Did they have access to the information going over their servers?
Well, they at a certain point, and I found it to be 11:14 p.m., the traffic got so high because everyone knew that Ohio was the entire presidential election came down to Ohio. And once that happened, you ended up seeing a whole string of anomalies coming out from the Secretary of State's office.
So that might have been investigated if it hadn't helped the next president actually win the election.
Well, there were lawsuits and there were investigations, but what I found is again and again and again, the key evidence disappeared. The ballots were supposed to have been impounded, but they were destroyed, even though there was a court order impounding them.
So what kinds of anomalies are we talking about here?
Well, we're talking about, I mean, as you mentioned, the exit polls, there was a differential of nearly 7% from what the exit polls said and the actual voting. You had various districts. There was one in Cleveland where you could see a technique happen that is sometimes called cross-voting or the caterpillar crawl. And I think when people go to a vote, they don't realize that the voting booth next to them, and this is even if they're using punch cards, has a different ballot order. And if the wrong machine computes the ballots, the vote goes to the wrong person. And we see a lot of evidence that it happened again and again in Ohio.
Now, we've been told that in this country it's hard to fix an election. There have been issues of ballot stuffing in the past. In fact, supposedly JFK won partly because of ballot stuffing in Illinois, in Cook County. But aren't machines supposed to eliminate those problems?
I think machines are very, very easily rigged. I talked to several experts. I mean, there's a group called Black Box Voting. I talked to a computer security expert named Stephen Spoonmore and several other people, a guy named Harry Hursty. They all said that that the code in a voting machine is much, much simpler than in an ATM and much, much easier to fix.
Is SmartTech still around?
Absolutely, and they are playing a role, and it'll be very interesting to see what role they play in the upcoming election. Incidentally, they hosted the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth, for example, back in 2004.
Hosted them in what way?
If you look at who is on those websites in Chattanooga, it's virtually every conservative group you can imagine. And they hosted Karl Rove's emails. Again, they mysteriously disappeared when Karl was under investigation.
And do you think we'll ever find out what happened to them? I've heard that it's impossible to really get rid of emails.
It may be impossible, but it's going to require no one is able to break through with smart tech yet. And those records, by the way, if you're in the White House doing government business, your emails are supposed to be open to the public, but according to the Presidential Records Act. But Rove, rather than keep his emails on whitehouse.gov, kept them on the RNC account with Smart Tech.
So when Smart Tech has contracts with governments, is it made clear that they are a company that has partisan activities?
No, I think there's been a real breach in the firewall here because they were responsible for protecting government documents, and 22 million emails, as much as 22 million emails, seem to have mysteriously vanished.
You note that Karl Rove saw the war in Iraq as a good political move for President Bush. Why did he see it that way in 2002?
Well, briefly it was, and that is until everyone. It turned out to be an endless war, and that it was fabricated on based on fabricated evidence. If you remember that wonderful mission accomplished scenario, it was straight out of a Hollywood movie with Bush landing on an aircraft carrier and emerging as if he's a war
hero. And that
was
Karl Rove's idea?
That was it. And it was right out of Hollywood. It was staged at dusk with the sun just so on an aircraft carrier.
He's also been accused of being involved in the effort to discredit Joe Wilson.
Well, absolutely. There's no question that he was. And he did leak information both to Matt Cooper, a reporter at Time magazine, and he was a second source for Bob Novak, the reporter who originally reported Valerie Plame's name.
So why wasn't he indicted? After all, we had another man who eventually, of course, was pardoned by President Bush, but a key figure in that White House was indicted.
Right. I think he was, Karl Rove was a very, very lucky man in this case, and that Patrick Fitzgerald, the prosecutor, was putting together an enormously strong case against Rove, and that Rove had actually testified before a grand jury that he had no recollection of leaking this name. What Rove didn't know when he first made that testimony is that Matt Cooper had testified and did actually have documentation of their conversation. Meanwhile, a colleague of Matt Cooper's, a reporter at Time named Vivica Novak, no relation to Bob Novak, happened to be friendly with Rove's lawyer, and she was chatting innocently and sort of gave the game away that Rove did have a real problem with Matt Cooper's testimony, and Rove quickly went back to the grand jury, changed his testimony, and that's how he got off.
Now, given his record with the Bush administration, why do you think the Obama campaign isn't aiming more of its criticism at him? After all, he is a chief adversary here.
Right. I think they should. I mean, I think it makes perfect sense because here you have a very, very direct link with the policies of the Bush administration that proved so disastrous. But the Obama administration has not gone after it. I think it might be a productive way to do it. I think the answer may be that I'm not sure the American people see a political strategist as the opponent, and they want to keep their guns fired at trained on Romney.
Craig Unger is a contributing editor of Vanity Fair. He's the author of the New York Times bestseller House of Bush, House of Saud, also The Fall of the House of Bush, and now Boss Rove, Inside Karl Rove's Secret Kingdom of Power. It is published by Scribner. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you for having me. ¶¶